Is it a pleasure to be coming on after the Leafs beat the Flames? Is it too early this season for you to already hate the Leafs?
Already, I mean, we're assuming I didn't hate them before. No, I think it's they're an exciting team, especially this year. And obviously, I mean, we had like 5 days off the Flames had. So I thought they, at least from what I saw, it looked like they held their own pretty good after, not showing any rust after literally 5 days off, I think. So they got them again, what, tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah,
So should be a good
they
one.
do tomorrow night. Yeah, man, we're excited for it. I mean,
Perfect.
this is a live interview, so they're playing tonight. That's what's happening here.
Very
It's
live,
live.
so super live.
It's very live. Yeah, so we'll see them tonight. Yeah, no, it's okay. You get the days mixed up. We all do that. That's COVID, We're just all getting we're all at our homes, forgetting what day of the week it is. It's totally fine. So, yeah, dude, we love it actually, this North Division, this Canadian division, because the Leafs are probably going to end up hating the Flames in the same way that Flames fans actually hate the Leafs. Like, this is actually really, really good, I think, for hockey because it's going to spark rivalries. And it's not just going to be like you guys with your Battle of Alberta, and you're going to extend it to some other places. Yeah, do you like it? Do you like this format? Do you hope they kind of keep it moving forward? Because we love it.
I think it's awesome. I think it's definitely a change of pace. I think I feel for the guys a little bit with the travel, but it is nice that they're playing like back to backs in each city. Makes a lot more sense. But you think about that flight going back and forth from Vancouver to Montreal. Whenever we have to change one or two time zones, even three's even, it's a lot. I mean, if you're getting back and forth every week, but no, I think you're bang on when you said making new rivalries is kind of important. I mean, you think about what the Flames and the Oilers have done, and I always said, like, okay, it might get rowdy, but I mean, you think 10 games, how much are they actually going to be able to get going for 10 games? I see the rivalry going pretty hot for, I think, half of them, but I think it's going to get to a point where both teams are, they're tired of being angry at a certain point. I mean, they got to be. It's exhausting. So I think it is awesome to kind of create those new rivalries between, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa that we haven't seen as much, and especially the Kachuk, from Calgary to Ottawa. I think that's going to be a cool one too.
All right, we're talking to Braves righty Mike Soroka, Canadian, and of course had the devastating Achilles injury, tore your Achilles. How's the rehab going, Mike? How are you feeling?
Good, yeah, good. Thank you. I mean, it's definitely slow for the first 2 months, really. I mean, you think about, I mean, your foot, you take so much weight, and you don't really realize how much you actually put through it when you do something simple like walking, or when you go to running and jumping. I mean, you're really pushing exponentially your weight every time you want to do something explosive like that. So the first 2 months are really slow because it's pretty well non-weight bearing for 4 weeks, and then after that, you're kind of just getting back into it with a boot. And it really started to pick up for me, I guess, about a month ago. Once you really start to get the strength back in the calf, and a lot of the feel just starts to kind of return. It starts to feel like your own again. So everything's going really, really well. Barring any setbacks, I don't see a reason why I shouldn't be on the roster on opening day. And that's the approach I'm going to take going forward.
I'm always curious about when big injuries happen where guys are off their feet for so long, how it changes their approach, like what you focused on while you were laid up. Because, yeah, man, you can't pitch. And I don't know if it's working on grips. I don't know if it's watching film. I don't know if it's talking to guys. I don't know if it's downtime. Like, how did you approach that?
I mean, ever since the start, really, when I made the decision to switch to baseball, physicality has always been one of my strong suits to be able to, get the work in off the field. I think being a Canadian kid, we actually had off seasons with baseball. I had 4 or 5 months of a year to get in the weight room and be physically superior when the spring came along. You learn how to do other things in that sense. And I think it's almost kind of hard not to go too far that way and just become a meathead. We're kind of lucky with throwing because you kind of take some time off throwing, or at least pitching every year anyways. It was almost basically just a forced early off season is what it was. But no, I mean, I was back in the training room 3 days after surgery. We started a lot of blood flow restriction therapy then. And as soon as I got the clearance to get back in the weight room, which was, I guess, 2 weeks out of surgery, I was in the weight room. I was doing, you know, single leg biking, lots of things that had to do, you know, with just that one side, because there's a lot to support that even though you're not using the same side, your nervous system doesn't know that. So it's kind of about keeping up work capacity and allowing your body to realize that it remembers how to recover, because when you sit there and you don't do anything for four or six weeks, your body's going to forget how to, you know, take stress every single day. So it was important for me to get back in there and get done what I could get done. And, you know, it was basically playing catch from one knee for a while and then moved it up to where it was kind of just resting on a, you know, bolster so I could be on my one foot. And then basically as soon as I was able to move laterally well enough, I was on my feet throwing again in, I guess, October or November even. So, you know, it came along quickly after that point, and, you know, I basically have our medical staff to thank for allowing me to do all that kind of stuff and keep my body to where my ankle will be catching up to the rest of my body and not vice versa.
It was such a freak injury. And as a pitcher, you know, I'm sure you're well aware of how your arm feels, how your elbow feels, how your shoulder feels, and making sure you keep best care of that and your whole body too. But like to have that type of injury, well, first of all, it's one of those weird ones where like almost everybody can identify exactly what happens in the moment. But like, how did that even happen, really? And did you know what was happening in the moment?
Oh, yeah. No, I knew right when it happened. I know well enough what a muscle cramp feels like. And I heard it, but I didn't know that was it right that second. But as soon as I got up, and you basically can't push anything through your foot, I didn't know. I knew exactly what it was. I mean, it wasn't you're in kind of disbelief. You're in a bit of shock, but I knew exactly what happened. That's why we didn't waste any time on the field there. And I wanted to get to the bench, get the next guy on, let's go.
Yeah. Is there anything you could have done differently to avoid that? Or is that truly just like a freak fluke thing that there's no way to know how that happened or how you can avoid it? And it's just, hey man, you just move forward.
I mean, you gotta be careful, kind of trying to find reasons as to why things happen. You know, when it comes down to it, really it was bad footing. You know, I was trying to get to someplace quick and a change of direction. And it's really mostly what it was. And you know, if I had to find kind of one thing, I stretched my calves a ton because I used to get pretty tight calves. And, you know, maybe I overstretched them to the point where they weren't strong at end range, but that's about it. I mean, there's nothing preventatively could have done differently. And if you keep looking for those reasons and things that you could have done differently, it's just not going to work.
Talking to Mike Soroka, Braves righty. So yeah, man, you did get a couple of games in. Like I said, it was, I think, your third game of the season last year. So you got a couple of innings in there, and it was a weird season, obviously 60-game season. And I think one of the big storylines going into this year, if we do get back to 162 games, is how guys are going to go from starting whatever 10 games or fewer to back to 30 and a couple hundred innings. And for you, it's even less than that. But like I said, maybe it's a little bit easier for you. Maybe you won't stand out as much because the rest of the starters around Major League Baseball will also be looking to build up their innings. How do you see the season going for starters in particular, considering the weird year we had?
I think it's going to be different for the vast majority of starters. You know, you're going to have guys like Kershaw and Scherzer who say, I don't care. I'm going to throw 200 innings this year, and they should. You know, they know their bodies in and out, and their arms in and out to where they can. They know what they need to do. You know, and you know the other thing too that's kind of missed in my case a little bit is we really didn't stop after spring training, so I got built up, and then Newcomb and I kept throwing, and started throwing live to a few of the guys back home here in Atlanta in May. So really, we started to get live innings, although they weren't quite the same. We started to get live innings in May, June, July, to where, yeah, I only got those three real games, but I was still doing something in those months that we'd still be playing. I think that's more important than total inning count. It's not like we just decided we weren't going to pick up a baseball until summer camp restarted. And I do think that you're going to see a lot of rotations, either add a sixth man in at some points during the season or even skip guys when it comes down to, May, June. So they get that breather in May, June, and then they get the All-Star break in July, and then another breather probably in late August, early September to get the guys ready for playoffs. But it's going to be interesting to see how teams handle it. It's a conversation we still have to have, and we're trying to get things going here first and then worry about all that. But I do think you're going to see some things change a little bit.
Yeah, you're obviously very thoughtful when it comes to your preparation and your workouts and the load that you're putting onto your body and onto your arm. And yeah, when you are talking about that, just the idea of how things are going to change and how that could happen and skipping starts and six starters, how much of this, like you kind of alluded to it there that you haven't had those talks with the teams already, but for you and in your experience, how much of that is like working with the sports science teams and with your pitching staff, like with your coaches, in terms of determining what that outlook is going to be and the amount of control that you have personally in accepting that type of a workload?
Yeah, I think mostly it's, I don't think we have the same sort of sports science. I know Toronto's got a division that they kind of rely on to provide a lot of stuff. But, for us, it's our relationship with our management and our coaches. It's about me being able to be honest with our medical staff and our pitching coaches to say, hey, man, I was kind of feeling it last start, or I felt like I was kind of running out of steam, and, to where you can skip the start before you're actually tired. Because if you wait till you're out, you are tired, you're going to have more problems in general. So, for us, it's much more of a internal conversation, realizing how everybody's different. Everybody hits their peaks at different times. Typically not somebody that's been hurt by any rest. So, I've never actually minded taking off some extra days in between, freshen up. It never hurt me a little bit, whereas some of the guys saying, okay, I might skip the start, but I'm still going to throw on that fifth day. I'm going to throw an extended bullpen. I got to keep things going or else I lose rhythm and all that kind of stuff. So everybody's different. It's just about knowing who you are and then obviously being honest with your staff too.
So you mentioned them, Toronto. They signed George Springer after this off season of rumors and will they, won't they, and will anybody come here, and how much are they going to have to pay, and are they going to get left at the altar, and blah, blah, blah. And now this fan base is just extremely excited, right? And I think that for the most part, the country is excited. I'm sure you've had conversations with people about them. And you said it, since you become a pro, you don't stay a fan. So I'm not going to ask you do you care about the Blue Jays and are you rooting them on or all this stuff? But do you care just from the standpoint of Canada being this invested in baseball? What did you think of that signing and what the Blue Jays are trying to do here?
No, of course. I mean, there's always, I attend every year that they had it. Obviously we didn't have it this year, but the Baseball Canada banquet in Toronto every year. And it's very heavily supported by the Blue Jays. And, the Blue Jays are Canada's team. I know there's some people over in Vancouver and that side that are Mariners fans because it's close. They were able to go to games, but the vast majority of Canada is Blue Jays, and it should be. They're always going to be supportive of the Blue Jays being, all over Canada in their winter tours, their baseball camp tours. That's all really important when they come out to Calgary or Okotoks and put on a camp for kids and, growing the game, I think is really important. It's important for a lot of kids coming up to understand that, there is a future in baseball. And I think that's the number one reason why a lot of kids don't end up in baseball is just because they are athletes, and they see opportunities within hockey, and they just say, well, no, I'm too good on the ice to pass that up, and I don't know where my future would be in baseball. But, you know, I'm always supportive of the Blue Jays, and obviously I hope we're the ones winning in the World Series. But every time you see the Blue Jays going out to make moves and, you know, putting together a winning team, which I think they're now going to have for a while. You look at their young core, it wasn't too much different than what we had just a couple of years more advanced. You know, they're in a really good spot, and that should be exciting for the country.
Yeah, and you got six games against them next year in Interleague starting at the end of April and then into the middle of May as well. But like JD mentioned it kind of, I don't know, it shook the fan base here to see the Blue Jays come through on not just a free agent, the top of the market guy in George Springer. I don't know, do players talk about who the big teams are in free agency, who has the money, who's throwing the cash around? Like the Mets and their new owner, Steve Cohen, that was a massive offseason storyline. Do guys who have maybe free agency approaching in the following season or a couple of years down the line, do they talk about how different ownership structures are changing or where targets or landing spots might end up being?
You know, not too much, really. I mean, that's all pretty, you know, public. It's all stuff that you can get on Twitter. And, it's no different for us. I mean, we don't have too many conversations with ownerships. But obviously we see what the Mets are doing. And, you know, to see them and what Steve Cohen's been doing is pretty remarkable in it, regardless of the team they're putting together. And of course, you know, we're seeing them and we're seeing they're getting scarier and scarier as it comes. That still excites us because we know we're going to have competition. At the end of the day, that's what you want. And we're looking at the NL East as probably the best division in baseball next year. You know, you look at some of those lineups and you think, okay, you know, where are you putting the Phillies at? And then where are you putting the Nationals at? And when you've got a lineup with the Nationals that has Soto and Bell, two guys with some of the best hand or bat to ball power in baseball, I mean, and Schwarber too, that was the other one I was looking for. I mean, through and through, the NL East is going to get pretty strong. And, you know, it excites us. It makes us, you know, worthy. And when we hang another banner, it feels that much better that we earned it, you know, because we had a tough division. And you want to see that throughout baseball. You want to see teams want to be competitive and want a team to win. And going out and getting a guy like George Springer is how you do that. He's proven what he can do every year, and especially in the playoffs. I mean, that guy's lit it up in the playoffs, and that's what you go get a guy like that for. To have confidence going in those big games that you can make that push past, you know, a lot of the other teams that are there every year, the Yankees and the Dodgers, and that's important.